January 24th, 2020, month-end meeting at 4 o'clock and regular town board meeting at 4:30.
Open up the meeting and get started. I'd like to welcome everyone to the June 25th, 2020 meeting for the Monroe Town Board. And we've got a couple of vouchers for minor discussion on. First one is voucher. I said voucher number. Do you have the vouchers for discussion?
They don't have voucher numbers.
Oh, they don't. Okay. So the first one for discussion is in relation to Business Automation Services Incorporated. It's for the annual building department license for BAS module. Because it exceeds $1,000, we need approval to make that purchase. It's similar to the system that we've already approved for payment for clerk's office. What is the total amount?
$3,070.
It will be in the amount of $3,070 that comes from account B3620.4.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion?
This, I'm assuming this is basically some computer software.
Yeah, it's part of our annual software agreement. Okay. To be able to access BAS system. I don't know if you want to offer any more on that, Leanne. How does your office use the system?
It's the same thing. They use BAS for their building department software program. I use BAS for my town clerk and my taxes and my water. And there's just, you know, a fee that they charge per year for the maintenance agreement on it. Okay. You know, so if we have any issues with anything, they help us out with that. And they update the software and everything periodically.
So this is just for the building department?
Yes.
Okay.
And this is for the whole year?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. And then the second item I have for discussion, this is from Paul for the highway garage expenses. A while back, the board had approved a purchase order for the repair of highway truck number 13, which is the 2012 International, in the amount of $3,800. This was back on April 28th. And the total cost of the truck exceeded what the town board had approved by $78.20. So we need to increase the amount that the town board and the private authority to pay that voucher in the amount. Actually, it's $3,878 more. And this was for I believe it was for a module, a patent module on that that's proprietary for international truck company. And so what we would need to do is authorize a total purchase order to be increased up to $7,678.20. And this money would come out of equipment repairs, which is account DB5130.405.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
I guess I'm surprised that they were off by so much.
I think what happened was when they got into it, there was another software problem.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, Paul will not be able to attend the meeting. If you want to table it, I'm okay for further discussion.
Well, that's not going to change the price screen. So I was depending, obviously this doesn't happen a lot with Paul. He's usually pretty close to what he comes in at. That's a big difference. That's not my initial reaction was the same as yours, that it was $78.20.
Yeah.
It's more significant than
what it's twice as much. Yeah.
So
twice as much.
But it's not going to change anything at this point in time. Again, this isn't habitual where things are off as much. So.
And let me just check to see if I have supporting documentation under the video. Yeah. Yeah, so in an email on May 4th, Paul had indicated that there are more problems and parts needed for that truck repair. He says when they took it apart to install the new EGR, they had to flush two coolers at this time. They found the hot side to be leaking into the engine with antifreeze, and they found the cold side to be three-quarters plugged with debris from a bad EGR valve. Now with extra parts and work and engine flush, the total repair will be approximately $7,800 to $8,000, depending on the total time for labor. And he said he looked up the parts online himself, and total alone for three different vendors, they all exceeded $6,200. So they're all in the ballpark for it. This truck was over there, I think. So that's how they got to the total amount that I just reported.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You want to see the
box? I'm fine with that. No, thank you.
Paul?
No.
Or I'm sorry, John?
That's okay. That's okay. I remember the emails, and I remember the conversations, and thinking that this was a truck that had a lawsuit filed against the company. It was a
PGN.
GM.
Sorry, GM.
Sorry. That's okay. That thought, with that said, it was kind of like... there was a class action lawsuit that was payable. But with the timing of it, it didn't happen.
Right. Well, we weren't willing to settle for that amount, so we still retained the rights to pursue that if we wanted to.
That potential on us?
Yeah. We can chat with Carla and that a little later.
Okay. We're going to wait on roll call. So on this, I'm just out of business of business. There's an additional $900 in this and one.
It's for an additional user of the software. Typically, the assessor's office has someone who uses the software as well, so they can look up the codes for the buildings inside of the town.
Yeah.
There was an additional license use this past year with the code enforcement officer, so the assessor is paying the extra amount for their license.
Okay. So the total voucher amount is $39.70 versus $30.70 is what I'm looking at. That information came through with $30.70. This is showing up $39.70.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. So this second part
is
because it comes from the assessor's department, it's not subject to the total. So if you guys need to approve it, it's over $1,000, which is this one invoice.
Okay.
Here, it's going up for S and
D. Okay. Got it. Thank you. That explains it more. Sure.
Councilmember Hogan?
Here.
Councilmember Noonan?
Here.
Councilmember LeClaire?
Here.
Councilmember Donahue?
Here.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Here. And with that, if everyone please rise for a pledge of allegiance. The
pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. First order of business here on the agenda, number one, is approval of minutes. And we actually have some corrections that we need to address. The first one is from the, that's actually from previously approved minutes. First set being from May 12th. We had some typos in there where council member was listed multiple times on a roll call. I think it was council member Noonan was listed twice. Council member Donahue wasn't listed at all for three of the resolutions. We wanted to make sure that that was accurately reflected. So we will need a motion correcting the minutes from May 12, 2020, page 127, which is resolution 172, page 129, which is resolution 173, page 130, which was a resolution to close the meeting to reflect that Councilmember Donahue, his name be inserted in place of Councilmember Newman, who was listed twice in error. However, the votes are accurate and remain the same.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
I thought Kyle would start multiple personalities.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved unanimously. And then also on that same meeting minutes, May 12th, 2020, I had received authority from the town board in relation to a correspondence where we, in my correspondence, I had authority from the board referencing a particular lot number in the industrial park. In that correspondence, we, town board authorized a reference of lot number 6. And upon providing the letter to the property owners for their purposes of an application with one of the companies they're working with, they realized that it was not the lot that they were referring to. They were referring to lot 7 instead of 6. So with that, I've entertained a motion to correct the minutes. I've already corrected the correspondence that was sent out to my office to indicate that the resolution in reference to the Rome Industrial Park referenced lot 7 in place of lot 6. So,
second.
Any discussion?
Oh, good. I have no idea what lot 7 or lot 6 is.
They're right next to each other.
Are they like down back or they up on
the no, if you drive in, so you and I walked down through when we were looking at the Nagmohawk or National Grid right of ways, where they were dumping garbage, cargo practicing, and we're in the process of installing a gate there. I believe lot 6 is on the north side, and lot 7 is on the south side.
Through that dirt road there, yes, because then the next pieces are on
right. The town. Right. So it's across the dirt road from each other.
Okay.
On the left.
Okay. Okay.
And I have a map of all the lots if you want in my office.
At some point, I'd like to look at it just to see what we're going to
run. And we've got it. I know the assessor's office has as well. So either way, we can get that to you.
Okay.
So any other discussion? All in favor of that change?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries to make that change. And you've got that for your records?
Yes.
And the resolution was 2020-170 on page 124. All right, I don't have it on the agenda, but I'll just give a brief update on COVID for Saratoga County. As of.
Can I just interrupt for 1 second? You didn't approve the minutes from June 9th. Did you want to do that before you jump into that?
Yeah,
or?
Absolutely. Thank you for keeping me on track.
Sure.
So with that, we'll move on to the unapproved minutes of June 9, 2020, which was a regular town board meeting, and entertain a motion to approve those.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimous. Thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome.
So moving on to a brief update on COVID-19 here in Saratoga County. To date, we've got a total number of confirmed cases of 539. We're holding steady with deaths at 17. The number of recovered cases out of that number is 499. We still have 24 active cases with one hospitalization. And to date, 22,754 residents have been tested. So we've leveled off in our holding pattern here, which is good news, which kind of counters what's happening in about half the states and elsewhere in the U.S., so that's good news. At this time, I don't have a requirement to set future meeting workshops. We may, at the end of today's meeting, I'll be able to address that then. I have on the agenda, just for discussion, I wanted town council to just update the board. I know she's provided a draft to me, as well as board members in the multifamily dwellings, a proposed change to our local ordinance. Do you want to just cover what was changed in that?
Sure.
What would be the next step, Carolyn?
Sure. So you all have out of the memo. As you recall, this board has issued a moratorium on multifamily dwellings in the town where I was going to extend it one time, and the moratorium ends on August 30th. So I know that sounds like a long way away, but as we all know, it's really not that far away. So what I've done is gone through the zoning code, gone through everything with some information from folks as to where you want multifamily housing and where you don't want the housing and what it actually means, and what is a two-family dwelling as opposed to a multiple-family dwelling. As I looked through, two-family dwelling is actually not defined in your code. One of the reasons we're redoing the zoning code. So what you'll have to do is, I've given you a number of different definitions you can use for two-family dwelling. Some of them came from the multiple dwelling law from the state of New York. Just because it is referenced in the code in places, it should be defined. So I have that in there. The other thing that I looked through is where multifamily housing is permitted. Right now, it's permitted two-family and multifamily are... Multifamily is only in the UR zone. Two-family is in R2 through 5, the RP, and the UR zones. So the question for you folks is, if you want to just keep multifamily's apartments in that one zone, and if you want to remove the two-family from the other zone that it's in, or if you want to remove the two-family from, keep it in some of the residential, take it out of the ag district, however you want to do it. That's basically what we've got in here. And if you look through, I went through your comprehensive land use plan and the farmland protection plan to give you some food for thought as to where you want these to be. I didn't draft the law because really it's not drafting, it's more removing. So until you tell me what you want me to remove, doesn't make a whole lot of sense for me to remove anything. The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is the timeline. In order to make sure we don't extend the moratorium again, which you folks have said you didn't want to, under the statutory dates, it makes sense to really start moving this in the next couple weeks to have your public hearings in July so we can submit it to the state to kick back to be effective before the moratorium is over. It's not a, so I gave you a fairly conservative date, and there has to go to Saratoga County Planning because it is zoning. They only meet in a certain day of the month, so there's just moving targets. So that's basically what you have in front of you. I'm happy to take any suggestions. I'm happy to do whatever you tell me to do.
Thank you. I didn't really get through all the information you sent.
I left it on.
You might have. But I'll get back to you.
Okay.
I will also get back with you once I can read it, write some notes on it, think about it. I think considering what, you know, water and what's happening with our water in the town, how we go about dealing with multi-family type of structures is important. So, you know, so I do want to give it some more time to digest and give you some notes.
I just had a question, Carla. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, we're looking at, we're honing in on the R5 Ag District. Do we still have, or will we still have provisions, because I think they're important, that allow for any kind of agricultural enterprise to be able to, if they needed to have, you know, H2A workers where they come in to live on the premises for a certain period of the year, help with the harvest or, you know, crops or cattle, anything like that. The way it is now, would that be permissible? If somebody wanted to either modify or expand, like, you know, bunkhouse or anything like that. You know, something that happens more, it's more prevalent in parts of the state where you have fruit and vegetable type operations, but, you know, we don't want to limit the ability of that type of enterprise in the town because of housing. Is that something that's accommodated?
I don't know if it's currently actually in the law. I don't know if, I only say that because I remember a few years ago there was some issue with somebody doing that, but they may not have been in the R5 zone.
Okay.
Because they put a mobile, they put a mobile home on their property and they were using it for those folks.
Mm-hmm.
But they might not have been in the R5 zone. If it's something you want to keep in and you can use it as a special use permit part,
okay.
A temporary permit, there's ways you can put that in there.
Okay. I'll get you some thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Any other comments on the draft? Okay, so we'll get that to you, Carla. I know that it was kind of a pressing time schedule, but, you know, I'll tell you that as a guideline.
It is. It's really more, the push would be to get it to Central County Planning, because if we don't get it to them for their July 16th meeting,
yeah.
We have to wait till they're mid-August meeting.
It has to be in its final form, right?
It has to be not approved by the town. Obviously, we can't approve it until they approve it. But I have to have a law drafted to them.
So we, so the board members will give you comments.
Yep.
I don't know whether the board would like council to take those under advisement, make those changes, or have another open discussion on it, get it into its final form, and then send it to the county. It's whatever the board would like to do.
I mean, having it sent to county, we can have our public hearing still in July, even if we don't have it to the county. We just can't adopt it until the county comes back. So we may be adopting it at the very end of August. And that's fine. Just there might be a little bit of a lag, which between the moratorium ends, because until the Department of State approves it, it doesn't go into effect. So I don't know. I just want you to be aware of that.
Okay. Thank you. Very good.
Next item on the agenda, item 4, is the Highway Department. I'll start off just a brief update. We've got the entire roof, new roof installed on the Highway Garage. The only thing they need to do now is do the penetration for the vents for the heating system that's down there, which has to go up to the roof. I would want to make sure that we have certification and approval with the manufacturer so it doesn't avoid the warranty. So we're working on that right now. But I will say this, that in talking with the town's engineer, Paul, and some others, they were aghast at the workmanship that occurred when that first roof went out. There was no joints weren't sealed. There wasn't any foam installed. There was structural screws that did not go into anything. They indicated that if we had a high windstorm through there,
at just the right time and location, we would have lost the whole road. Now, that probably would have been good from an insurance standpoint because the town would save a lot of money if they're spending the to replace it. But anyway, that didn't happen. But you know, we've done it right this time. We've had a proper oversight, and you know, we should have it buttoned up here in no time at all. And that'll take care of another issue that has been outstanding for some time in the town. Along those lines of the roof, it's actually a twofold issue. The first one, I would start out by saying that we have received our notification from states where CHIPS funding will be. And right now, our portion is $240,682.16. However, all municipalities got a notification with their funding amount that there will be a 20% reduction right off the top, which takes $48,136.44. So what that does is leave the town with $192,545.73. So that's good news. You know, we're getting some money. It's not as much as what we wanted, and some of the monies that we didn't use last year was rolled in over into this figure, according to Paul. Related, not to CHIPS, but to highway operations, I was in contact this week and heard back today from Senator Jordan's office that, if you recall, Senator Marchione had sponsored a $200,000 grant to assist us with the roof repair, which is about a third of the cost of the repair. The Senate majority has indicated that the senators that it's highly unlikely that we will see that money anytime soon, with the state not having funding and putting a freeze on a lot of the grants. This is a state aid municipality grant. It's not just for the Senate district, it's across the state. But it has the real ramification that, you know, when we put projects forward predicated on the fact that we would eventually get that money, it causes a hole in the budget. So that leads me back to the conversation that I had with Paul regarding CHIPS funding. And he and I agreed that of the $192,000, because we do have a $200,000 shortfall, we would like to use $100,000 to help plug that $200,000 hole in the new roof replacement. So that would leave them with just over $92,000 for paving. The good news on paving is that with the low-cost petroleum, paving is down, you know, double digit, 20-30% over what it was last year. So dollar for dollar, we can get more paving than we probably could have with last year's prices. Bad news is we're putting less money in CHIPS toward it. So we took a look at the thing I talked about, the priority roads that we had outlined, as we do every year at budget time, which roads needed it the most. I actually traveled every one of the roads, and he and I came to a similar recommendation on where the priorities will be, but he'd like to go out and revisit the list. And when he does do that, he'll get that list to me, and I'll give it to the board members so you'll know what he's going to focus on. I do know that one of the things he really wants to take care of is public road shimming. And if you're not aware, CHIPS funding can only be spent for capital outlays that will last 10 years or more. Shimming, I guess, is deemed as a temporary, it's not a 10-year fix until you do the top road, and that makes it, you know, a 10-year fix. So anyway, bottom line is, we're going to use $100,000 of CHIPS money. The board's okay with that for help offset some of the deficit in the roof repair, which is just about done. And we'll probably be looking at fund balance for the remaining $100,000. So instead of taking $200,000 out of fund balance, down to about $100,000 for the roof. paved in. So I'll get that information on the roads for that. Do I make a resolution on that? Just an administrative?
I would do a resolution just to have it.
So I guess I would be asking the board, since I did have a conversation with concurrence with the highway superintendent, for a resolution authorizing that of the monies anticipated received from the CHIPS program, that we earmark $100,000 of that for the highway garage roof repair.
Motion to approve.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried unanimously, and I know that Jeff is very happy that I took care of half of this problem. So that is that. We have another request for repair for another international truck on the highway. And I don't know if the board members received this or not. I'm pretty sure of it. And I don't have a formal request other than an email that we received a quote from the same company that we talked about in the community. Yep. And this would be for international truck number 10. He has a quote, looks like the same issue, for a remanufactured EGR valve that includes credit for a core, but a sensor, and there's a core charge and a core credit. Bottom line is to repair the truck. We have an estimated cost of $2,891.24. He's looking for authorization to tell them that, so that he can tell them to make the repair. He indicates that we have available $24,861.57 in account DB5130.405 for equipment repairs. It's not on a formal list. I don't know if the board members got a copy of it. If you don't, you can either take a look at it on my copy, or we can table it until the next meeting because he's not here if you have questions. I don't have a lot of information other than what that purposes do. So, totally whatever the board places.
Is the truck currently out of commission, or is it?
I think so. Because I think, I shouldn't say, but it doesn't kick down into safe mode in that EGR valve goes? I don't know.
Based upon the last conversation with the other truck employees.
So if you want
to approve it, go on board if they need it. At what time do they get on that in the truck? Based on the price provided by
Acoustic, at a price not to exceed $2,891.24.
So I will make a motion to approve the repair of truck number 10 at IRA for an amount not to exceed $3,000.
Second.
We have a second. We have
any discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Do you have the information you need?
I don't, but I can get it tomorrow.
Okay. Also under highway, we have a resolution regarding dedication of Timber Lane to the town of Rowe, and I know that council has even more information, I think, to share with the town board members yesterday.
Yes.
But you do have some
information. I do have new information. This is dedication of a road in, I think, it's a 12 or 13 lot subdivision off of Butler Road. And we've been working with Paul to go through all the requirements under your code. Paul has given a sign off that he thinks it's ready to go, and it's good to move forward to have the board accept the road. The little hiccup we had today was that the law requires a letter of credit in a certain amount. There was a little discussion between the developer's engineer and the town's engineer with respect to the amount. Developer's engineer ultimately agreed with the town's engineer. It had to do with the fact that when the developer's engineer looked at the asphalt, it was at an all-time low. And when the town's engineer looked at it, they all agreed that the asphalt is going higher. And obviously, we've been in situations before where we don't want to have to pay money in the event this doesn't work for the developer. So in speaking with the attorney for the developer today, we have all of the documents in, that we need. The only thing we don't have is the actual signed deed, which we can get after this. And we don't have the cash. What they're going to do is deposit the $57,000 in the town's coffers to hold as a separate line item. When I spoke to the town, the attorney, I said, you know, the board could, if desired, approve the dedication tonight, contingent on receipt of the signed deed and the check, which we're anticipating will come in on July 2nd. So what you have before you is a slightly different resolution than you got yesterday. I think I sent it to you today, but it came in early this afternoon. It actually has a second resolved paragraph that indicates that once we have, you have the money, when you have the deed, then you authorize the supervisor to sign the documents. Leanne, is that the one that I gave you?
I have no idea. Can I bring it over and show
it's
you really
quick? The second resolved paragraph is a longer one.
I'm coming over.
Yeah, no, it's quite a bit. So that's, I mean, I have a resolution. I can read it if the board wants to. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. I do know that I believe they're watching, the developer's watching. I did indicate that there was no public comment at the meetings, so we're just watching to see what you folks are going to do.
No pressure.
No pressure.
So then, do you have a copy of that?
I don't.
I have.
So I'll ask council to read the resolution, and then if somebody would like to move forward or continue the discussion, that'll be a board question.
The resolution accepting deed to Timber Lane's dedication. Whereas Timber Lane Holdings LLC has offered a deed to the town of Moreau to dedicate Timber Lane, as more particularly described in the survey map entitled Map of an As-Built
survey for a road known as Timber Lane, dated December 16, 2019, made by Darrow Land Surveying, PLLC, to be filed in the Saratoga County Clerk's Office contemporaneous with the deed. And whereas the Highway Superintendent and the engineer for the town have recommended acceptance of Timber Lane for dedication for highway purposes. And whereas pursuant to Moreau Town Code Section 124-17, Timber Lane Holdings, LLC, delivered to the attorney for the town a warranty deed with lien covenant conveying Timber Lane to the town. And whereas pursuant to Moreau Town Code Section 124-17, subsection 1, and in agreement with the town, Timber Lane Holdings, LLC, will deliver a check to be held by the town in the amount projected by the fee estimate, as well as an affidavit affirming the installation of the top coat of Timber Lane. And whereas Timber Lane has already been approved as a street or highway in accordance with the standards and specifications for a town highway within the town of Moreau, and in conformance with applicable regulations and requirements and provisions of state law pertinent thereto. And whereas Timber Lane Holdings LLC has complied with all submission of all of the required documents contained in Moreau Town Code 124-17, including the providing of a title insurance policy named the town of Moreau as the insured policy and an as-built survey. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the town board, on behalf of the town, does hereby consent to the order of the highway superintendent laying out the said streets and does hereby accept the deed of dedication on the said road to be known as Timber Lane. And it is further resolved that upon receipt of an escrow deposit and a sum not less than $57,258.89, and receipt of the duly signed deed transfer documents and those other certain items specified in Section 124-17 of the Code of the Town of Moreau, the supervisor is hereby authorized and directed to execute any and all documents necessary to effectuate the dedication. And as further resolved, the town clerk is directed to record the deed in the Saratoga County Clerk's Office.
So we can move that forward for discussion. We can have a discussion. The board's pleasure. So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on that?
I go over today. Don't look nice. There's one house up there now.
Good.
Glad to hear
it. Hearing none, then all in favor?
You need a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, you moved it. There's the second. Okay, I'm sorry. My bad.
That's okay.
All in favor?
Yes. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries then.
I will follow up with the Developers Council with respect to the rest of the documents.
Okay, great. Thank you for doing all of that. And I think that's all I have on the highway, so we'll move on. Item 5 on the agenda is a standard work day. We, the town board, have approved a resolution for a standard work day for the town assessor, Lee Cronin, based on the information I've provided to us at the time. However, we have to approve another motion because the previous motion did not accurately reflect the term of the assessor. I think she was in there for 1 year. It's a 6-year term, as the board knows, for assessor. So we had to make that change. So, do you have the resolution? Do you want to read it?
I have just a brief resolution, if you want me to read it.
Okay.
Be it resolved that the town of Moreau will report the amended days per month to the New York State and local employees' retirement system based on the record of activities maintained and submitted by those officials to the clerk of the body. And it has the assessor, Leah Cronin, a 7-hour standard work day, but her term changed. It was stated as October 1st, 2020. It should have been stated October 1st, 2019 through September 30th, 2025. And the days per month recorded is 25.15.
Move that.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Item 6 is the listed as the water department with lots of activity to report on. First of all, the town of Moreau is using an awful lot of water.
As a matter of fact, we set a record, I think, for the history of the town of Monroe yesterday, going over 2,030,000 gallons. Of that total, we were providing 122,000 to the village of Southlands Falls, based on the IMA that we were able to work out this week. And that's down a little bit, about 10,000 from the previous day. The village, I think, took 132,000 or 134,000. Of course, that day was a little bit higher. Of that 2 million amount, 700,000 is coming from the county, and 1,330,000 is coming from the town of Queensbury. As I discussed with the board, we don't have any additional capacity, so it's something that we need to move forward on rather quickly. A little bit later, I'm going to be asking for support to purchase that capacity this evening. But before I do that, I just want to thank the village for working with the town on coming to an agreement on an IMA where we could get water to the village to meet their needs. I signed that 2 days ago. The town of Queensbury signed our agreement, which I had authority to do from my meeting in February. So that ensures that the village will now have a guarantee of water as provided for by the town of Queensbury. So thank you to the town of Queensbury as well for working with the town of Monroe. We had hoped, and I don't know if I mentioned this last meeting or not, I had had conversations with the County Water Authority and on the County Water Authority Board of Directors, and we were initially hopeful that the county could help in providing capacity that would meet the needs of the village, and I provided with the numbers that the village wanted a commitment for. It was much larger than they had the ability to do for a short period, and they had concerns that they would not be able to meet the legal obligations of the current customers because they are in fact that capacity as well. So that caused us to turn to town of Queensbury and we worked it out with them. So it was a good multiple political subdivision involved in making it work so that everybody has water flowing today. As a highlight to, or I should point out a point, to that very high number, which is a record for town row. Also in conjunction with the village of Southlands Falls, the town issued a water conservation notice. We did a reverse 911 call that went out at 3 p.m. today, basically saying that until further notice, use of water for all the town and rural residents that utilize municipal water can only use outside water for outside purposes, i.e. watering gardens or lawn, etc., between the hours of 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. in the morning, and 5 p.m. and to 8 p.m. in the evening, with the one-day period not to exceed 3 hours. So that went out at 3 p.m. It's in coordination with the village of Southlands Falls. So it was done jointly, and they received the same call. So hopefully that's going to take a little pressure off of our usage until we get a little more cooler days and our water consumption is reduced. But as part of my conversations with the town of Queensbury, it was very important that the town move forward with the purchase of additional capacity. I indicated to them that I'd be bringing it to the board this evening to purchase capacity. I have worked with our town principal counselor to find out how much money we have available in the 2020 budget for water districts.
mentioned, I was hoping that we were able to purchase over $100,000 worth of capacity. Per the IMA agreement with the town of Queensbury, we can buy those blocks of 50,000 gallons per day of capacity at a cost of $53,000. So I have a resolution if the board wants to move forward. We have not purchased capacity for the town from Queensbury since 2008. And it's something that should have happened a long time ago. Capacity that we had always planned for our commercial district has essentially been redirected for some of our projects, multifamily projects that have been approved by previous boards. And so I think it's proven that the town has a foresight with the commercial quarter coming online with sewer over the next year or so. That, you know, it's nice to have sewer, but it's very important to have water too. So my recommendation, because it's budget neutral for 2020, is to utilize $106,000 to buy that additional 100,000 gallons of capacity today. Just to give us some breathing room in there. I'd like to purchase additional capacity down the road, but I think under the circumstances and within the financial confines that we have in the budget, that was a good first step moving forward with 100,000. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
I agree. We've talked about it enough.
So
I didn't give you a resolution.
I may have a resolution here. Is it a good one?
Science behind it, but
yeah, I really don't think there was a scientific
possibly getting their plans, and I didn't know if we had a discussion about that when the rest of you were here.
So we have capacity of 1.25 million gallons a day, agreeing with the town of Queensbury. We also have language in our, I don't know, the CMA or the contract that has provision for a penalty. When we exceed over a 30-day period, we pay 85 cents per thousand for penalty and get nothing for it. So I thought it was much better to spend the money to get something than to spend the money just for a penalty. So the penalty was 85 cents per 100,000. Per thousand.
Yep.
And that'll allow us to buy water at a rate of $1.17 per gallon. So basically, you're spending money to get something, you're spending money to get nothing, and I think okay. That's the way it's going to be.
I think since Tim Rowe was here, how many years ago was that? That he
had recommended. Oh, yeah. Okay.
We just haven't done it. I think sometimes the community at large is like, people haven't had it. But it might be in those discussions.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what it does is it continues to position the town for the future. And you know, to me, it's vitally important that we as a board are consistently doing that. Because what we found, we're cleaning up some of those problems. If you don't, it just compounds the situation and makes it more expensive down the road. So we're bidding on the this issue. So did we call the roll on that?
I think we're all finished with
that.
Yeah. I just thought we. Yeah.
All right. Also, along on the issue of water capacity, the Saratoga County Board of Supervisors has earmarked about $170,000 for economic development grants, and with it being setting aside 7,145 for each town, they'd have to submit a formal application to get the money. And so we just did a formal application to use the full amount of the grant for economic development purchase to buy additional capacity, which, you know, with the intent of it going toward our commercial board, which is where most likely to take place. So that application was completed earlier this week, and I think it's already up and running. So I expect that we'll hear good news on that down the road. And if, for the public's benefit, if you have any additional information on our water restrictions, they are on the town website, which is townroad.org, and there's more information available for village residents on the village's website, which is sgfny.com. So, obviously you can call either the village or town hall, and we'll answer questions too along those lines. So, hopefully we'll see a reduction with that in place beginning tomorrow. The zoning administration, as I indicated at the previous board meeting, our contract with the LA group for the zoning administrator expires July 31st, 2020. I have had conversations with Jim Martin, our zoning administrator. He would like to stay on. He would keep the terms of the agreement the same as they were for a previous two-year agreement. If the board is inclined to move on that, we still have time. We have to take action tonight. But I just wanted to update you that the price would be the same if it were to move forward with an extension for two more years. So I expect to take that up probably at the next board meeting. I just wanted to update you on that.
Thank you.
Okay. 8, is our telecommunication connectivity services agreement. And this is the result, I believe the state has changed vendors for telecommunication services. And so these would be, these are state contract prices. My recommendation would be to, go with the contracted price. But I believe I still need a resolution authorizing me, the supervisor, to sign the agreement on behalf of the company.
I'd like to make a motion to allow the supervisor to sign this agreement on behalf of the town board.
And I have extensive information on all the prices and the services.
That's the Internet Communications Incorporated.
Okay. So, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Number 9 is, as we discussed at the last board meeting, Monolith Solar has been purchased by another company, and there's an estoppel agreement, I believe, as part of that, that basically I have to sign, even though there's nothing we can do about it, whether I want to sign or not.
It basically just says that you are told that Monolith has been sold, and you were told that this is who the new person is, and everything is staying the same. The estoppel does set forth all the requirements, the right data, and it says the escalation clause is the one that's currently in your agreement, Monolith. So there's nothing in that that has changed, so they've verified that they were basically assuming the entire agreement.
So the resolution
would authorize you to execute the estoppel agreement.
Right. Do we have that in the new company?
This is the one where the staff agreement has one name, the new company is different, but they are related entities.
They are. So what I'd be looking for is authorization from the board to...
use the name on the staff agreement.
Yeah. It says a solar PPA equipment lease establish certificate and consent to solar PPA equipment lease agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
The name is the consent agreement would be signed by the town and Monolith.
Yeah, it's not the town and Monolith. So Monolith provided you with the proper notice that they were selling. We did that on their June 8th email. They said they're selling Sunlight General Capital. The assignee in the agreement is SL Empire Solar Roman numeral 1, comma LLC. So that's the SL Empire Solar 1 LLC would be who you're signing the stock agreement with.
So we've had that.
Yes.
So the motion would be authorizing the supervisor to sign the stock agreement with that entity.
So moved.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor?
I have a question.
Sure.
What kind of exhibit A? Is that increase? Number 9. Why 9? Is that increase in any other than electricity rate except in 2019? No, 1.7%. That's later in January.
That's in the current agreement.
Mm-hmm.
2013, we had the model agreement.
Yeah.
So that's what was in that one as well.
Okay. Does that mean that our, it goes up that much each year?
Well, it's the escalator.
Yeah, I don't have all that documents in there, but that's what they can go up to each year. Yep.
To the bathroom, but they have the authority to. People who don't give up a lot of money.
No, I get it. I'm just thinking that it's crazy that we're bringing up that.
I don't disagree. Any other discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Item 10 on this evening's agenda, I have listed as the Sewer District 1 Extension 5 update. Just wanted to bring the board up to speed. We're continuing to progress nicely on that project. We're at a stage now where we're trying, we will be wrapping up easements for where the infrastructure will go on private property. And I had a conversation with the town engineer as well as the town attorney regarding, whether we want to use eminent domain, whether we don't. My personal preference is, as someone who supports private property rights, that I think that that should be the last resort that we use. And as an incentive, one of the things that we can do is provide for a purchase of the right-of-way based on footage that we use. And it's not uncommon that some projects move forward that way. But to do that, we obviously have to arrive at a fair and equitable cost to the landowner for that right-of-way. So in talking with Don, one of the ways they do that is they will hire an appraiser just for that purpose. And he suggested that, knowing how I feel about it, I'm not sure how other board members feel about it, that we move in that direction. He indicated that there is money in the budget that should cover the cost of those right-of-ways. It's something that he does as an operating procedure when he puts the proposal together. And we have to hire appraisers. So my recommendation that the board as an agreement is that we authorize him to seek out appraisers, come up with a recommendation, which I will pass on to the board. This is something that we're going to be pretty quickly for the next week or so, 2 weeks or so. Prior to our next board, I think it was 3 weeks before our next board meeting. So if the board's in agreement, I will forward his recommendation to the board members for review, what the costs are, what their services will entail, get feedback from you, and if there's a consensus, give them the authority to move forward, and then we can memorialize it at the first board meeting in July, if you're okay with that. Or if you don't, you want to go in a different direction. That's another feeling.
I'm okay with it. You know, again, like you said, it sounds like a standard operating procedure for the engineers who have done this before, protecting private property rights, I guess, and the board giving folks the option to sell, I think it's better.
Yeah.
So, I'm okay with it.
And also, I think these people pay taxes on this property, call this land.
Right.
They're not making money on it,
but I would figure it. Well, it's not going to be a huge dollar amount, and they still retain the ability to use the property.
Yeah, they're still going to pay taxes.
And they're still going to pay taxes.
This is just an easement. It's just an easement. You're not buying the property, you're buying the right piece of property.
But it's an ability to cause a disruption to them.
Oh, I wanted it to be clear.
Yeah,
you're not buying their property.
Right, and I wasn't assuming we were buying the property, and we were buying the right.
And I would just add, one of the reasons this has been precipitated is that under the previous administration, we had any easements secured for a lot of land going down the Google. So, we're going to go right here.
We get a resolution that will allow Adam myself to engage an appraiser after we discuss. I've reached out to a couple of appraisers who specialize in this sort of linear footage valuation, so hopefully we'll get back to you soon.
I'd like to make a motion to authorize the supervisor to instruct the engineer to seek out appraisers and their services in order to purchase the rights, the use of the right, these rights of way.
Second.
I authorize him.
No, yeah, so you don't want the motion to say seek out. You want the motion to say you're giving the authority to retain an appraiser after due diligence by the appraiser and the board members prior to the next meeting.
Upon agreement. Man,
you got all that, right?
Oh my gosh. Audio, don't fail me.
You good with it?
No, I'm good.
I'm good with it.
We know what we're trying to do.
Second. Okay, we got a second from Councilmember Hogan.
Gotcha.
You sure you're okay then?
I think so, yes.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Thank you. That'll keep the project going, and we are on track to be getting piping and ground. Not really an inclusion of, we're hoping to be at the end of 2021, we'll be a couple of months into 2022. But regardless, we're still on track, we'll save money on it, we'll apply for more money, free money. So, in the meantime, we'll buy this, assess the value to the district, which benefits the current landowners. So, it's all good. So thanks for that. We'll move on to item 11 on this evening's agenda, which is the draft solar law. As many are aware, and there's folks tuned in that have a keen interest in the direction the town board is looking to go regarding our draft solar energy law. I just want to, so this evening is basically the unveiling to the board publicly. We received copies of it privately. And this is an opportunity this evening for all the board members to, as part of a discussion, provide input, possible direction to the town attorney. This is as part of the process. This is the starting point. It's not the ending point. And we will get this to a point collectively as board members of where we want it to be for the public's input. And then we will open it up for all the public to have all the opportunity in the world to weigh in, let us know what they like, what they don't like. And then we will have the ability to decide whether we want to make changes, we don't want to make changes, based on what we're hearing from the public. So this is the beginning of having a formal document. And we've been going through this process for some time, and I'm going to ask council just to give a brief overview of where we started and how we got to where we are this evening.
So we're actually at almost exactly the 1 year mark from where we started with the initial moratorium. This came up back in the public hearing was actually on June 25th of last year to have a moratorium on this. If you recall, we set the moratorium so we could get some more information about how to do with solar laws. The town of Monroe does not have a solar law. The only place in the town of Monroe where solar is arguably permitted is the industrial zone. And it's only permitted there as a power plant, and I believe by special permit. So if there's nothing specifically in our law saying solar is allowed, the zoning department under the prior zoning administrator and continued under Jim Martin has interpreted power plants to be where we fit in solar energy. It's a little vague contiguous. That's how the town has been doing it since Joe Patrick has been into Jim Mark. The moratorium, so at this point, it wasn't allowed anywhere else anyway. It wasn't allowed in the ag district, it wasn't allowed in the commercial district, nowhere but industrial. Moratorium went into effect last summer. Todd and I met here in town hall with some of the NYSERDA, for the summer or fall, some of the NYSERDA folks, their council, and some of their another individual, and went through what the town would like to do and how important it is. And we sat with them for an hour or more to go through everything. They provided us with all their documents, and there's been ongoing communications with them. Moratorium ended up, and so you are aware, this has been before, at least on the town board agenda, five times. On an agenda five times, specifically in the last year, but I think it's been discussed, at least by members of the public, every meeting, every other meeting, someone has discussed it. The moratorium expired. We had to adopt the second one to keep it into another 6 months. If you recall, Mike Valentine over at the county said, you're going to end up having to extend this. You're not going to get this all done in 6 months. You should probably extend this. But the board wanted to say, well, do just 6 months. We can do it. Hindsight is 2020. 2020 is 2020. So February 25th, you folks put the second moratorium into effect. We received the, Jim Martin had drafted a first draft of the law. And we got it right then. He sent it to me right about then. And then COVID happened. On March 10th, you had scheduled a meeting, a town board meeting with NYSERDA, which was supposed to happen on March 31st. Obviously, it could not happen. Since then, I've spoken with the folks at NYSERDA again, because there's new state solar siting laws out there that didn't come into effect until the budget was passed in April. We have looked at the farmland protection plan that you folks have, the comprehensive land use plan, the solar laws of Milton and Northumberland, and Greenfield, and probably Livingston out in Monroe County. Probably at least 15 different zoning laws, plus the model use law. Between myself and Jim, we put together the law and some consultation with the supervisor as to what we took the solar, the model law that NYSERDA recommended to use, and we tailored it to what we thought the town of Monroe would be good for the town of Monroe, especially with the town's unique emphasis and protection of its farmland. So what you have before you is a fairly, I think, a good compromise between protecting land and, protecting the land and protecting the landowner. Again, this is your law, this is not my law. So what I would recommend is we can go through it. I want to thank you for your comments that you presented to me. Jim has answered a number of them. I know Jim's spoken to a couple of you as well. I spoke to Jim earlier today, and he indicated he spoke to some of you folks. What I would indicate is that you're on the same time frame with your moratorium as you were with the multifamily, that if you want to not extend the moratorium, then you either have to understand that you are going to hurry up and pass a law, which you may not have thoroughly vetted, but you may have, if you're good with it, we get through. Or you understand that moratorium goes away. Solar is only allowed currently in the industrial zone. That's kind of where you're at. I think that's everything.
I'm committed to not doing another solar moratorium. So along the same lines, I also want, we're going to have a solar energy law adopted by the board. I want us to make sure it's the right down the road. So me personally, I'm not going to feel compelled one way or the other because the moratorium is going to sunset. But we'll continue to take however long it takes for us to come to a consensus on
go line by line through the law, or?
That's going to keep us here until into the zoning board meeting and then pass.
All right. So, yeah, well, that's right. We do have one more meeting tonight. So, well, then we can go right into comments for council to take into consideration as we move the process forward. So, I know you have.
My first item. I have concerns with the law. One of my biggest concerns is we can say all town residents, but the residents that are most impacted are the residents that live near this in the farming district. Those are the residents that have come to us more than once through the years to say, why won't you help pay for us to have high-speed internet? Our kids can't always do their homework online because of the connectivity. People can't work from home. It holds back the people in the ag district. I think about what's happened in the last couple of months. People are coming out to get the Chronicle, but the grocery stores maybe like they used to, but maybe they don't know they can get it online. There's a lot of focus on COVID. There's a lot of focus on the riots and that. How many people in the farm district will be the most affected for this are really aware of what's happening? Are they even able to watch us here? So to say we're going to move forward and have a public hearing that the people most affected by within that district may not be able to contribute to from their homes, that we really need to be able to have them here, that you know it slows things down, but they came out in pretty good force to work with us on the Farmland Protection Plan. A lot of the work was done in 2013. We sent out 108 letters. They invited residents to participate in a survey. Back then, solar really wasn't on the table back then. Nobody was considering solar generation facilities in the farmland or anywhere. They did come up with suggestions on things that they felt could help in the farmland, but a 20% turnout or a 20% response on surveys is something we were told was a great response. That's not a low response. Even about 20% doesn't seem like all we wanted. So I think those people that care about the farmland that came out that responded to surveys, sometimes there was a lot of people here for those meetings, that it's only fair to them too. We're listening to the people that want the solar. We want to make sure that most of the people that haven't had a chance to speak out is easily conveyed. And I'm thinking this is not going to work for a lot of them. We talk about how we lose connectivity at some of the meetings, and we talk about how that we get cut off early. How do we say you have to be able to watch this and speak to us via this setup? And I don't think it doesn't work for me to be able to say we're having a public hearing until we have this hearing.
Yeah, we're going to go around and give everybody an opportunity, but from the administrative standpoint, I just want to make it clear. It's a long. I didn't bring it up. I meant to in my opening remarks. I have no intention of moving this process forward without the public having the ability to be here in person. This is the most significant land use change probably in the history of the town of Row, at least as far as the ag industry is concerned. And I think it's important that people have the ability to be here, make their comments known directly to the town board, face-to-face. There's no technology limitations. Do bring a good point. I have very slow internet at my house. I do not have cable in front of my house. Some parts of that district don't. This law will have the greatest impact in the ag district, so I think it behooves all of us to make sure when we get to that stage in the process that we make sure the public is here, has the ability to be here in person. And hopefully that's not too far around the corner.
I was pleased today. I was thinking about that. I thought, how can we say we're having a public hearing when these people maybe can't even participate? Or some of them can't participate. So I was pleased today when I came in and said to you, hey, this is how I feel about that.
Councilmember.
Well, I'm sorry. What about the actual law? Do you have any information?
Yeah, solar facilities.
Does he disagree with solar facilities?
The solar generation facilities or the electrical generation plants, the solar in the farm district is not something that I agree with. I'm fine, I understand the cost of electricity, the cost of our milking machines, or whatever equipment is happening to heat barns, to heat homes, that I'm not against helping those people with the cost of solar, but to use valuable farmland and impose on a neighbor's perception of their land being something that they can look out and see across the fields, nobody wants to look out and see solar panels.
So out of farmland whatsoever?
Out.
Could I just ask, does that include use on farm consumption as part of the business, or
no? You own a farm and you want to generate enough electricity so that you can help with your farm electric bill, your personal electric bill, and you have solar panels on the roof of your barn, on the roof of your home.
So on farm consumption, you would be okay.
I would be okay. But
roof mounted or ground mounted?
I guess it would depend. I need a discussion on how much ground mounted they need. There's three homes on Community Fort Edward, and two of the neighbors, there's two of them that have those ground mounted facilities. Mm-hmm. I think about this poor neighbor next door. How's he going to sell his house? Who wants to buy a house and look out the door? And there's two very large, significant solar panels behind the homes. And the other behind the homes, but somebody is looking out of their house looking at those panels.
Kind of like the ones that are right up here by the town hall.
Yes.
Council member.
So, just real quick, I have a few comments as well. I'm curious to know, when you made, Ms. McClary, you made a comment about the Farmland Protection Plan of 2014, and solar wasn't a major concern at the time because it didn't seem to be popping up. What was the major concern at that time? Was it housing tracts, or was it what was to protect it?
There was discussions about ways that if farmers were looking to be able to make, not make money, but be able to help support their farming operations in ways other than crops or animals. There was a restriction in the farming district that you have to have 5 acres, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it's 5 acres to build a home. So it's never been easy for them to say, okay, I'm going to sell a little of my land off. They talk about things that happened in other communities, such as say this table is your farmland, and this is all wood farmland, and this is the woods over here in the corner. Typically, if you were going to put homes on that, you'd need 5 acres, so you need a big barn. You might be cutting into the farmland. But in some areas, they changed zoning. I don't know the words, what they called it, but since then, you've got to put 10 homes on 5 acres each to be able to put 10 homes in. They might say, you can put
cluster development.
Yes, that's it.
Land use development.
Cluster.
So the homes are not in a way that would interfere with the farming, and they're not in the middle of the farm field. They're placed in a position that might not be used as much for farming. And it wasn't something that we made into a law that we could do, but they came up with ideas like that that seemed like a way that the people seem to think that that was a good thing. Being able to do ag tourism.
Sure.
Tourists, you know, they say, oh, come and stay on the farm for a week and learn to milk a cow and learn to things such as that.
I appreciate that. I'm only asking because, again, Supervisor said this is going to be one of the largest land use changes or laws that we. Or that we'll deal with in the town of Morella. I just was curious to know, because since solar has kind of shown its presence here and the desire for it, I was wondering if, you know, obviously if we were writing that farmland protection plan now, maybe that would be in there as well. But
it might be, but we don't know because we haven't asked them.
Right. So that was I was curious about that, but I had some comments as well about this. You all saw my comments on the residential side of things. I don't know if we need to reread that at this point with Mr. Martin's responses.
It's up to you. This is the first time that, you've all read them, I presume. It's up,
sure.
It's up to you, however you
want to
do it.
At some point, I guess, if you prefer public, you know, to hear it, or is it something that we just put up?
Yeah, this isn't something I would put up. This is the memo I put together. That's an internal.
Yeah, but I would go over your concerns with the draft, and if you had questions that still need to be answered for you?
I mean, I don't have questions on what Jim responded.
Or recommendation.
So I would say I had a lot of, my initial concerns seemed to be about the oversight on the small ground-mounted PV systems, which obviously are different than the large. And I was curious as for the reason for no site plan review on the small systems. Mr. Martin's response essentially had said, you know, being smaller in scale, the thought was that smaller systems, as long as they meet the requirements, should be subject to a permit, administrative or for compliance, and if deemed to be compliant with applicable regulations, a permit can be issued. Being of a small scale, the expectation that an adverse impact could result from a system that meets all requirements was thought to be unlikely. That said, the draft law can certainly be revised to require that all systems are subject to a site plan review. You know, I think that's, regardless if it's small scale or large scale, I think it's the land use. And again, the biggest issue that I think comes up with this is, can people see it and do they want to look at it? And I think the answer is nobody wants to look at it, nobody wants to see it. So I would really push for these smaller scale also being part of a site plan review. I don't know if the planning board goes out and looks at sites, and I think it makes a world of difference to see a site where something would go.
I think the board members individually go look, they don't go support the van.
No, I don't think they can do that. I think they have to go. Oh, they can. I just think it's so important, and then this does relate over to the large scale use of the land as well, because if you see it, you know, if someone has a multi-hundreds of acres, I don't know, you know, what some of the larger land owners have here, it is quite possible, I would think, to essentially tuck away a large-scale operation to keep it out of sight from the public. So, you know, I think both of them require some site plan review. It's already kind of in the large scale, but I think we should look at for that on the smaller side as well. Again, a lot of my comments were about some of the smaller scales, and then I had one concern, I think, again, worth mentioning, that while it's still labeled for C, you know, while it's still in, I think, C1, C2, and C3, those abut directly up behind neighborhoods with high density, and if you were to follow the law, it would put them right in someone's backyard. If they're sitting in their backyard, they could look out through these 15-foot solar array PV systems that I don't necessarily think that was, I think the whole point was to keep them out of those areas, so I think that was just the thought that, oh, it's commercial, but maybe there was just some oversight that the commercial butts up against some of these high-density residential neighborhoods. That's something for us to look into, and he addressed that as well. But that's the ground-mounted. I think roof-mounted are a different story. I mean, I don't think they look great either, but that's a little bit different. I mean, you know, if someone wants to put them on a house, I'm not opposed to that. For the large scale, solar PV systems, some that would be considered the commercial grade. What the moratorium has done is allowed me more time to think about it, drive the roads, drive the farm areas, look at views, and you know what's interesting is that I think I love riding around our ag district and our spots where we have these beautiful views, particularly if you continue down this road right here where Town Hall is. You head out towards, you cross Route 32 and you head out and look and you see all those, the mountains in the distance. It's beautiful and I wouldn't want to see a solar array. But I do believe if you have enough land and property that you should be allowed to put solar in a way that with, you know, site plan review, make sure, you know, follow the setbacks that we create. you work within whatever the law is with planning board and zoning, you should be able to do that. Now, the percentage of land, as I guess where I have some question as to what should be allowable. Now, I think one of our neighboring communities, which is also essentially almost 100% is Northumberland, 100% ag district at this point.
I'm from Northumberland,
and I'm an ag district. Okay, so I don't know how the percentage of land in Northumberland is, but I believe they might not be up for around 25% on their law. And, you know, I am not opposed to, you know, I know we have 10 in here. I'm not opposed to 25 to 30% if, in fact, it can fit all the requirements, be out of sight, and, you know, the whomever owns that land follows this law. One of the things I feel about our farmers is that they are still the best stewards for our lands, and if in fact some of these farms have the ability to take some of the revenue generated from these power plants and turn it back into their farms, that will continue to allow for future farming. I don't want to see houses. I don't want to see 50 houses go on 100 acres or whatever the math is, 5 acres. I don't want to see 50 houses go on 500 acres. So I'd rather a farm carry on in the future if they have revenue that they can generate on their property. So, you know, and I know we've got a few projects in front of us that, and I think there are some misinformation, because I don't know if we've ever really all asked or figured it out. Capacity on the grid is different than piping into one of those transmission lines. So, we can talk about capacity on the grid all we want, but that's not really affecting, I think, some of these larger projects that are in our ag district or maybe even down in our R3. So, and I brought that up because at one point I was hung up on the fact that, you know, I know that we would love to do some solar here on some of our town properties, and I would support that. Obviously, you know, I know we've discussed the landfill at one point in time, discussed more down in the industrial park, that I am, of course, supportive of as well. But when it comes to the Ag District R5, it really has to be, there are unique properties down there. It has to be looked at from a spot where I think it can be out of sight and not be seen. And if it's out of sight and not being seen, I have a tough time thinking that I would be opposed to it. You know, I've done that drive from, I've said this to somebody, from Las Vegas to LA before, and as you cross over the California border and you look left and you look right, all that you can see, for as far as you can see, are solar panels. And that is absolutely not what I think our ag district should turn into. And my concern is, okay, if we go through and we allow 25 or 30 or whatever percent, is there a way to actually control that so that it doesn't turn into that particular scene? Is that where the planning board can come in and say you're asking for too much? Now, can the planning board do that? Can the planning board come in and say, you asked for 25%, but it's completely in view of all these people, this road, and we're not going to grant that? Can that happen?
They can't grant it solely for that. They can't deny it solely for that reason. A lot of what you're talking about is the visual aesthetic purposes.
Right.
That is a seeker determination, so they could look at it under seeker, but they can't deny an application. It meets all the rest of the requirements in there.
Right.
Just because it doesn't look good,
right,
they can't deny it for that reason. Because if that was an ability, there would be no project anywhere. There's always one person that doesn't like the way something looks.
Sure. Okay. So, and thank you for that. So I guess that is how I feel about the law draft as it's currently presented to us now. Again, I would support increasing the amount of gross area of each lot, ultimately.
In the R5 district?
In the R5 district, yes.
From 10 up. Now, and I know all of you have read, so you understand that, to your point, farms within the ag district that are using these large amounts for their farm, they're exempt.
Right. And so that's what I find a bit interesting about this, too, that if you're going to use it for your own, and it's viewable and everything else, and, you know, I don't know if I need to be okay with that. You know, like, if we're going to allow it for use for your own versus large scale to sell back to make some revenue, and it's actually a lot of revenue. It's not a little bit of revenue. It's a lot of revenue. In the few areas where it can fit, because I don't believe it can fit through the whole system here, through the whole 5R5 area, I think the screening part or being able to not be seen from the road or from a residence or whatever it might be, still needs to be part of the process. So that's how I feel about that.
Thank you, Councilmember Holden.
Thank you. I have some similar thoughts as far as like aesthetics, etc. I'm going to refer to this particular section. It's on page 6 of 9, section A, and it talks large-scale solar PV systems are permitted as primary principal use to set plan review approval by the planning board of the agriculture. What I have the problem with is the highlighted area where large-scale solar systems are not permitted to be constructed on prime farmland of statewide importance, farmland of local importance, or called unique soils defined by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, or local government body.
Is that highlighted in your section?
It
it's
is.
Not highlighted in mine.
I'm sorry, got it.
Must
have
come across.
Something highlighted in
for me. Well, no, it very well may have been because as I was combining them all, I'd like to know if I knew what was going on. And it just might have fun.
Okay. So what that tells me is that it's not permitted at all within the agricultural area? Any large scale system?
No, those are specific. So prime farmland, if you back up, John, to definitions, it defines prime farmland, and that's actually a USDA classification. It's not every acre of farmland. I don't know how many acres off the top of my head. I think it's in your farmland protection plan how many acres that is.
When I look at a map of R5 and I think about, was going through the agricultural protection plan.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a lot of the area that might be between Route 32 and the river would be pretty much those classifications of prime farmland or farmland of statewide importance, etc.
Okay.
And thinking about what people have presented to me for ideas, that would be an area that this might actually, I think, might actually fit. So I'm not keen on that there. Thinking about how much power can actually go into the grid, and thinking about how much power can actually go into the grid, and how big of a system could actually be built in the town of Morrell. I don't know if that's subject to change, but different presenters have come to us in the last couple of years and talked about a number that might be like 27 megawatts is all that can go in. And the one thing that we changed again tonight has Nexamp at the Morrell Industrial Park. We talked about a system going in, 3.5 megawatts there. Is that?
around four is what I think that person said.
Okay, so that would bring, with that understanding, that brings that total down to 23 megawatts?
That's what the existing capacity line is, you know, if there's upgrades.
We don't know that. It's kind of like, you know, a water line. There's only so much that can go through the line because of the size of it. And how many people are actually drawing off of it. Now, is it possible things are going to change in the future? Sure, there are. We kind of got to look at it as it's going to, you know, the Farmland Protection Plan was written in 2012, and we're now 8 years later, and in my mind, I'm thinking things have changed. The structure of the farms have changed. The whole agricultural business is changing. I don't want to see it excluded from some of these lands down in here, and I think that this does do that. I think that it does exclude it from that. The percentage, I'll go to. I have a notation. Page 8 of 9 percentage is section C3B, 10% of the gross area of each lot. At one point, I was one of them. I know that I thought that. I'm thinking that I might not want that in there.
Do you want that more or less?
No, I'm thinking more. I'm thinking about land and in particular what's been brought to me for thought of what they want to do and 10% want to do it for them. And I'm not really sure. So then going down in here, number 6. Installation on a farm shall abide by rules, standards, and regulations established by NISDAM. New York State, what's that? VAM?
Department of Agriculture and Markets.
Department of Agriculture. The construction installation will be designed to minimize any adverse impacts on the productivity of the soil and farm operation. So, thinking about that, and I don't know what those rules and regulations are. I guess I'd have to know more about them. But I, you know, when I think about solar, I think about it being a long-term temporary structure with these large solar arrays. What I'm learning about is that yes, you can own it yourself. Though there's a longevity on it. If you lease the land, there's an end to the contract, and the idea is to decommission. So these things will be pulled out, and the soils reverted back to where they were at the start of the process. That's one of the reasons why, and one of the big reasons why, I would not oppose it to be an agriculture, because even though it's a long-term use, it's not a permanent use. Versus, okay, I can't afford this farm anymore. I'm going to start selling it off the building lots. And I'd rather not see that. I did have, on page 9 of 9, I had question number 8 in the last sentence, 2 sentences here. The buried cable on cropland shall be a minimum depth of 48 inches. At no time is the depth of cover to be less than 24 inches below soil surface. Is it? I'm thinking that it's like, shouldn't that be like 48 and...
I think...
How can it be less than that?
I think depth of cover is a term of art. I don't know what's off my head, John. I know that Jim Martin actually is sitting here in the back. Talking about your law.
My law?
Yeah.
You mean my dress?
Have you ever heard the depth of cover with respect to buried electrical cables? The law right now says buried electrical cables have to be 48 inches.
Well, I think why that's being done in this case is in the event that these cables are transmission lines, so that they have to cross crop areas, and those areas have to be tilled or disturbed, that they don't run into the cable.
Right. I think John's question, though, is it may just be...
So she'll have a minimum depth of 48 inches, but then it goes on to say, at no time is the depth of cover to be less than 24.
Oh, okay. I can see the point there. They should at least be consistent. Mm-hmm.
So is that a 48 or 24?
Yeah.
However you guys want to
do. Well, I'm thinking, I'm just thinking that if it's going to be 48, you keep it at 48 or lower. That was my thought for that. And then 9B, barns that are within the agricultural district are generally exempt from large-scale solar energy system regulations, provided that the solar equipment is considered a farm equipment. What does that mean?
You're in D.
9D, page 99.
It's provided that the solar equipment is considered a farm equipment. Farm equipment, I know it. To be on farm, do you want?
This is, I'm assuming that this is for a farm that's utilizing the energy for themselves.
And they're making 110% of their energy.
110% of their energy. But if it's farm equipment, is that like on the barns? Or is that,
I can look to see if that if there's a word missing. If there is.
Okay.
It appears that the general.
There appears to be modifications made in this somehow. My draft is only 8 pages.
Right, and I said these are other things that we put in. I sent it to you, I thought.
Okay.
So let me look at that, John, and see if you can give you a further answer.
Okay.
You're just proving that you read every word.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm looking at it, and there's a couple things that just stuck out to me. When I look at the small scales and roof mounted, I'm less concerned. I'm thinking that there are areas that I wouldn't want a standalone system in a residential area. As Kyle pointed out, somebody's backyard where you're looking out, where they might have a pool and now they have a solar array. But there are some that are okay, because of the location of it. I'm good with that. But I think that it has to do with somebody going out and actually looking at the area that somebody's proposing to put something and have a determination made by planning board. I don't know. I think at this point that's
good. Well, in deference to that first kind of bear in mind, right at the outset about the seeing these in other people's backyards, bear in mind small scale ground mounted solar is not allowed in the R1 or R2 in the higher density districts.
Okay.
R3 and R4 and R5 are contemplating these are bigger yards, bigger lots. So you're not going to have them right on top of one another,
right,
in theory.
Yep.
Okay. So
thanks. Okay. That's it for that. Thank you.
Okay, council member.
All right. I've got a few concerns here, and Kyle touched on a couple of them, John touched on them. I think most people, and most residents in the town, are pro-solar, the ones I've spoken to. Big concerns are the locations in the site lines. Especially in residential areas, I'm just wondering if that. I think maybe we should look at lot size, because that's been mentioned here a couple of times. There probably are lot sizes that would fit in solar panels down on that would be insulated, that would conform and change the character of the neighborhood. But there's some lots are just too small, and I understand people's concern.
Are you talking in general or large? Yeah, there are lot size requirements already in for large scale.
No, I'm talking small scale.
Okay.
In residential areas, because that was people's biggest concern. If they don't mind solar, but have them placed properly where they're not. I'm considering the back of the process here. See the neighbors.
Well, then I just got one question. I think that's an interesting concept, because right now, what small-scale ground-mounted regulation that is being attempted here is it's attempted to regulate that by the district in which it's located. Now, it could very easily read to say, in the district in which it's located, providing there's a minimum lot size present. So, for example, there's a lot of substandard lots in R3 that are maybe a half acre in size, or just pre-existing non-conforming dating back to whenever. So what could be done part and parcel there is we could put in a minimum lot size as well, and I would just, seek to have some guidance as to what you think might be appropriate for that. So, it could be an R3, but the minimum lot size must be 1 acre, 2 acre, 3 acre, whatever, in addition to being in that district.
Right.
So that's a very good thought, about linking it to lot, and that can easily be done, and it's something that can easily be checked and enforced. I didn't mean to interrupt, John, but I wanted to say that I think that's a worthwhile thing to maybe contemplate as a minimum lot size in addition to just using the district as a location.
And you have a lot coverage thing in here, though. You're limited to only 1,000 square feet or 20% of the lot size, whichever's less.
Right.
So there's some protection in there already.
I had some of the concern of John's with the prohibiting of the large scale in the ag district is where they prohibit non-conforming soils they like for it. And I look at it and I got the numbers. Actually, I got the numbers from World Farmland Protection Plan. And by the time we get done with all the acres, it isn't a lot. An acre that isn't a golden bowl, which is over 3,600 acres because of the green wetland and trees, you come up with a very, very low percentage of any land available for hunting large scale down on the solar ground. I don't know why we put such heavy restrictions on it. I'm a firm believer that someone owns a property, a piece of land, they should be able to do within reason what they want to do in the property. As long as it doesn't, and this is why we have zoning laws, infringe on another person's property or the general lay of the land. And I think here what we're going to do is restrictions on a large scale. I believe in talking to people, like I said, about keeping the sight lines and putting them in the proper areas in the tile. I believe there's areas out in the ag district that are big enough to put in these large solar arrays, with keeping in mind, keeping the agricultural feel of the area, keeping the soil preserved, being able to continue to farm on the property, maybe to help them to stay sustainable by putting these arrays on there and keeping farmland. And that's one of our prime objectives, I'm sure, is to keep our farmland as farmland. Someone like that, I think, was John, and I think Kyle, too. That if we're not able to help these farmers stay farming, we're going to be looking at permanent things out there. John said these arrays are temporary. We'll be looking at permanent things that are taking away from the farm life out there. We're going to look at development, selling developments. I don't want that area to start looking like flipping apart. That's what happened out there. They just went off the top and they're outlining districts and they're slowly going off the health. And so I think we should do everything possible to help the farmers continue to farm their land. Put these things in where they can conform I don't say look nice, but and blend in. We don't stay where the sight lines are down to where we're not seeing them all over the place. I don't think anyone wants to see just to raise a panel, solar panel, probably agricultural land here in town. But I think if they're properly cited, I don't see any reason why we can't have some out. And I believe that now the way the law is written, it's way too restrictive. Way too restrictive.
So you're indicating, so that one, both you and John talked about that one discussion of the prime farmland. That's the real issue with the language.
But if you look at it, if you look at the numbers, and like I said, I got these numbers out of the farming protection plan.
Right, I'm just wondering if, like, the rest of it you're okay with.
The rest of the...
Because there's a lot that they have to, that developers and installers have to meet.
Right.
I'm just trying to make sure I'm taking the simplest notes.
But I think you've got to remove some of these restrictions. I mean...
Besides that one, what are the restrictions you're thinking? I don't want to get you on the spot.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I don't really get a chance to put you back on the spot very often.
Okay. Well, the percentage of property.
Okay.
You know, I think it's a, did it say the small or insects? What is the percentage?
The small are 1,000 square feet or 20%, whichever is less. The large scale is in the M, in the industrial, it's 60%, and in the R5, it's 10%. There's been discussion of increasing that.
Well, that's what I would, that's absolutely, I think that percentage would have to go up. I would want it to be the majority of the property, just not the way it is. But I'd be willing to say 35-40%, you know. If it can fit and be conformed to be properly cited, as we're saying there. And keep our sight lines in mind, because that is one of the biggest things, biggest concerns that people have about it, is the unsighting of someone. But I believe some of these properties out there are big enough that they should be able to be able to put them in there and still have our agricultural land.
Okay.
Like we'd like it to look. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you. We do have a zoning board meeting at 7 o'clock, so we can do that a little bit more time. Appreciate everybody's comments. There's been multiple comments from several board members about increasing the percentage numbers. And just as a point of reference, we have in the draft as a starting point the 10% figure in there. Now, I can tell you that the proposal out there on a 500-acre farm, 10% of 500 acres is 50 acres. That is half of our rec park covered in solar. So I think one of the things that we should also consider if people are looking to increase percentages, I think it should be capped at a minimum or a maximum acreage on parcel. I think that's something we should seriously look at. But I don't know, we'll go around the horn, still have more time if you want. If you know, if you're done for this evening, then...
We talk about limiting it, and we talk about farmers. But right now, we have one farmer that's choosing to do it. Tell me if I'm wrong. The grid has set amounts that they are required to take and to buy back. And after that, they don't need to take more electricity. So as we move forward, once we hit the cap with the amount that the grid has to take from solar panels installed by farmers or individuals or wherever they're taking it from, they no longer have to take it. So we can say we're thinking about all the farmers, but it really comes down to if this farmer puts this solar facility on the farms, that it pretty much effectively locks down anybody else's ability to have additional solar generation facilities in place.
To a certain degree,
there's
a matter of any entity could put up to 110% of their usage on the property. That does not, that number that that 27 megawatts isn't affected by that 110%.
But you use for personal use, so if you only sell that to the grid, like this generation facility would do on this farm lot, that what goes on our stump, I want to say, I've got the word wrong, but you know what goes over there is transfer station, what goes on at the industrial park, that all feeds the electricity back into the grid. And there was just so much electricity that the grid is required to take. And once that's met, you and I, Todd, or anybody else in here, won't matter. We can put personal use solar that had a little bit of excess that went into the grid.
Yep.
But we could never put another solar generation facility in the farm district. So when we're talking about farmers having a right and thinking we're allowing multiple farmers, this farm that wants to put 100 acres of solar panels down, and the few little projects like the one on the transfer station to help the taxpayers with the cost, and the one on the steep ravine in the industrial park, will pretty much eat up anyone else's ability to do something such as this. They'll only be allowed at that point not to sell back and benefit them with their farm costs, but only to be able to have it there to cover their personal farm costs, but not to make money like what's happening in this position. And I'm not against this farmer, but we say farmers, but it might not really help this one farmer, Jamie. It's not.
Okay, the thinking is that we wouldn't allow this to happen just in case somewhere down the line something might happen to not be there and join the club. See, that's a crazy way to look at things. I don't say it. We don't approve something because somewhere down the line somebody might, or might not, want to do the same thing. I don't understand that's
not my thought on not approving it. That has nothing to do with me not approving it, but I keep hearing you say farmers. There aren't going to be a lot of farmers, from what I understand, as far as the capacity allowed to be sold back to the grid. There isn't a lot of capacity left after this happens, so it's not farmers, it's not somebody's neighbor or anyone else that's going to be able to do this. So we're not helping the farm district as a whole, we're helping one entity in the farm district. And I'm okay with that. If you're for it, I'm okay with that. That's not why I'm against it. But there are restrictions. It's not, you're not allowing everybody.
The thing is that everybody wants to keep the ag district intact. We want to see nice, beautiful ag district. Everybody does. And so do I. And that's why I want to help as many farmers, whoever needs it, every farmer in here, to try to help them save their farm, keep their farmland, and not see what chance that a bunch of houses and stuff out there. Because that's what we're headed for. Because farming is changed. Farming is changed, as you well know. Farming is what farming used to be.
I know.
You know, it's tough to maintain farms out there today.
Let's get back on the draft, because that's what we're talking about. I do want Councilmember Newman.
I think maybe just to clarify, Mr. Clare, like say we want to put solar on the landfill and say we're going to be possibly signing a contract with someone down at the industrial park. That is unrelated in terms of capacity to say what one of the proposals is right now in town. The one in town that's looking for 100 acres is going directly up into a transmission line,
right,
not through a grid requiring capacity. So what capacity is left on the grid does entail, like, say, something that might happen at the landfill and the industrial park. But if this particular one, why this is a sweet spot, essentially, for this project, is this high power transmission line essentially goes right over the property and it can go right up into it. It's a lot different than going through the grid down, whether it's on Farnham Road or wherever. So they are unrelated. I don't believe they are. One is not, doesn't restrict the other.
Okay, I think that's okay, but I'll talk to you later.
Sure. Another question about this, though. Does the town have the ability to, now this is the part where I'm thinking, is it probably legal? I don't know. Reserve capacity. Say we want to put something on the dump, or the landfill, excuse me, and we know it's going to be a 7 or 8 megawatt system. But we, getting back to the grid, not talking about ag district at this point, getting back to the what's available for capacity. Can we reserve it for a certain period of time, and if we can't get it done, then we do give it up to other entities that are trying to do something in town. I know, because I know we've talked about it for our own use at one point, for our own capacity. But, again, unrelated to a large-scale project.
It is a large-scale project, though.
Well, that would be a large-scale project, but with a capacity of 7 to 8 megawatts.
3.4 is what was called.
For the landfill? Okay. So,
back to your question, I'm not sure if we can have a reserve capacity like we talked about an hour ago in water.
Right.
I don't know if we can do that, but I'm on the NYSERDA website right now.
So I mean, I only bring it up because I know we would like to also utilize the lands that we have here in town, put that on there. Again, it's not visible and it's a benefit, whether it's community solar or whatever it might be. And I would like that opportunity to do that for our town as well, and not necessarily give it all away if we in fact have property where we can do it on those amounts.
Zoning administrator, Jim.
Yeah, I just had a clarification on Tina's comment. Because what I heard you saying was that there is a potential that National Grid as a utility is only required to buy so much alternative energy power. And once they reach that limit, there could be a bunch of other alternative providers out there. Grid's not going to take it because they don't have to. That's what I heard you say.
That's why I thought this fell underneath that.
I don't know the answer to that question, and that's something to consider, because I could see that being the case, but I just don't know it as a fact or if there's a regulation about that or not. But if Grid did reach that threshold, then they're simply not going to take any more alternative energy power because their minimum requirements met. And that's a question. I don't know what the answer. We have to find out what that is. There is such a threshold.
I have one of the presentations here about that.
Even if you're under the big power transmission line or not, they're not going to take your power because they don't have to. They'd rather not go into that.
You can get
into this for you. I'll have to find out. That's an interesting question. I can see that being the case, and I can see where it might not. I just don't know.
I think that's where the 27 megawatt number came into play, is that that's what they would allow into the grid based upon what capacity they have. And that was presented at prior presentation.
And so like Gina's point saying, this isn't going to be the be-all and end-all for all the farmers in the community. If one project comes through and provides a huge amount of power, then the people behind him or her, you're out of luck because they met the thresholds of their project.
Right. And my understanding was that a presenter who was looking to do solar on the golf course area.
Still is.
And still is. And I personally, I don't want to see it over there. I think that there's a better use for that property. I don't want to drive down 187 and be looking at solar panels any more than. I like to go to other towns and drive through and see them over there on the main roads. I'm okay with solar. I kind of like solar. But I think that they can be better hidden, so to speak, so that it's not what you see when you drive through an area.
Councilmember?
To that point, I mean, if you want to, maybe you've all seen it before, but you go Bridge Road and between Spirit and towards St. George, and you come around that corner by the old landfill and see the fire truck right there, and you go, oh, look at the mountain, look at those solar fields. Because you see the mountain, there's a boom, big, huge solar array right there. And you know what? That definitely makes you go, oh, God, these things are clean and they're green and they're wonderful, but oh my God, really, they're taking back some of the environment. So, you know, I have that point. My other question here was, geez, now I just lost my I lost it as I got excited when I heard what he had said there. I should have wrote a note down. I guess I'm going to have to pass. If it comes back, I'll save it for next time. Or
shoot me an email.
I'll shoot you an email. I thought it was a good point to bring up. It was a question, so that I don't know the answer to it. So I will send you that question. Sorry. Thank you.
And I'll contact Jen over at NYSERDA to these questions and try to answer for you.
Okay.
The only other component wasn't discussed here tonight, but it's something we certainly have to take into consideration, the real property tax impact that these facilities are going to have. Mm-hmm. We will not be able to receive taxes on these California buildings, on the property. So,
yeah. I thought within the state law that it allowed for
So there is by transmission region or utility region, they come up with an adopted
amount. Yep.
per kilowatt.
Yep.
And school district gets divided by that, town, county gets divided by that.
Right. Right.
Won't be much left over on the town side.
Okay.
And it's not a lot. I think I saw numbers in Saratoga County and the National Grid Service area at one point during our conversation of about total, this is for total fee paid, around 4,000. We know the percentage of what your taxes go to the school district, so the same percentage would come out of that figure. So it's not a boom for a real property tax standpoint for us. But just for back on track.
It's written right in front of me. I didn't even look down.
Councilmember.
Sorry. New York State. Will New York State come through and say, great law, we're going to supersede your law and let people do what they want to do? Good job. Way to spend money, way to spend time to try and do what you want to do, but we're going to come and do what we want. Where do we stand with that?
Kind of.
Okay.
In the budget this year, they did enact the new siting law. Large scale.
Yeah, right. Big ones.
And ultimately, nothing is in law yet. So nothing actually is in effect yet, I think, until next year.
Okay.
It's been adopted, it won't be enacted because they have to draft up the regulations. Basically, it's saying any of these huge, large-scale projects will go through what's known as an Article 10 process. Basically, it'll be a different process for the state. I'm sorry.
Article 10 is power plant study.
Right, but that's what they, it's Article 10. They'll do is they'll say, okay, we're going to come over and yes, town, it's great, you have good laws. We like ours better, and we're going to go through ours. Doesn't mean that, I mean, you have the right and they're going to put regulations in place that you can, the town, the municipality can appeal that. And there's a lot of concern with the Association of Towns, I know, NICOM. A lot of places are really upset that because it's taking home rule away from the towns. That being said, when last I spoke to NYSERDA, they're still trying to wrap their head around what the regulations are going to be. They have a year to put these together. There will be lots of public comment on these. I'm keeping up with it. Once they're in the state register, there's a 60-day period that we all have the right to look at and public hearings for the regulations. So I think that's going to be a time that towns are going to want to start.
I'm sure they were delayed with COVID.
It is big for the governor's program, so it's a clean energy by a certain year, but.
Right.
What I would do is not take that and say, well, why are we putting all this time and effort into this if we're just going to be superseded by the state? I would really urge you not to do that. Keep
right.
moving forward
okay.
because, you never know what's going to happen.
Right. And then the other thing I just added that the same principle is going to hold true for 5G when it comes. Mm-hmm. And it's already been, the die's already cast. They've already severely limited the local community or local municipality's role in that review procedure, both in terms of time and if the poles are placed on, the antennas are placed on your right of way, the amount of money that can be derived from that placement.
That's for another time.
Sure. 5G is going to be,
yeah.
It sounds like a great technological wonder, but you talk about visual impact, mm-hmm. there's going to be substantial visual impact from 5G when it really hits. Laid out.
Okay. Any other comments on the draft legislation for this evening?
No.
Kyle?
No, thank you.
What's that? 1 acre. I don't think that's it's too broad. You can have an acre that's 75 feet wide and goes back, and
I could have a pretty square acre, so to just put an acreage amount on it, I don't know if that works.
Well, you know that it's not just, that's not the only requirement. It has to be situated, for example, the small ones in the rear. It has to meet side setbacks. So there is going to be a footprint that they can fit on that 1 acre.
Well, we can put lots of them there if you would like.
I don't know if I just thought.
We can add a lot of provision if you would like. It might be appropriate to do that because I understand the point. I see them all the time. There's lots that are essentially 7,500 feet wide, but they can go back 500 or 600 feet, essentially bowling alleys. And, you know, placement on that would be tricky and there's a high potential for a visual impact.
Okay, so I know that council has a lot of information.
Thank you very much. It's helpful to
and I would encourage board members as we go through the process to provide feedback as the information comes back from council. So keep the process moving. So with that, we're going to end the discussion this evening. We do have a couple more items on the agenda. Which I'll be brief since we've been on the meeting here this evening. Item 12 is supervisor items, just a few things. I received a letter from Hudson, actually an email with an attached letter from Dr. Sunwin with Hudson Headwaters Health Network indicating that in relation to the Task Force on Health Equity, the bottom line is to provide the best possible care for all patients now and in the future. He is pleased to announce the creation of the Hudson Headwaters CARES program, which stands for Culturally Appropriate Responsive Education and Services. The task force of health equity staff from various departments and community members invited him will review their messaging and approach to care and employment as they move forward. So, I'll make you aware of that correspondence. I was interviewed again by the Albany Business Review. I think the board members had a copy of the article. Headline is Investors Bought Haven Acres at the Snorkway Exit, which is 17. Those watching think it's just the beginning. Tom Rogan got a lot of good coverage in there. I can tell you that the Business Review tracks the number of hits when they do stories on the road. And they're huge whenever Exit 17 comes up in their article. So that's good news. Just a reminder about the last board meeting, New York State Canal Corporation secret scoping document in relation to the Earth and the Bank Integrity Program. The public still has until July 3rd, 2020, with a comment. I do have more information in my office. We had staff that has been working on the old, or the previous sheriff's substation. You know, the town historian has requested office space, and the town's, I think, required to provide space for historian use. And I believe after today, they're all set for that to be utilized, these parts of it, for town historian. And that's all I have for supervisor items. Committee reports. I know that council member LeClaire has just a brief update on the newsletter. She's done a lot of footwork on that. We're getting closer, but we're not quite there yet.
Jeffrey has helped me quite a bit. Thank you very much. And I am waiting or on hold until the lady that can quote prices comes back for work and then I'll take it to you. She left. It's been a week class. I didn't hear back from her call one day, and they said she's gone for another week. So as soon as she's back, I pretty much have the pricing set. And I'll at least email it to you. I hope we can make a decision this next meeting. And we approved over 4,000 back in 2019 at the end of the year. But there's the choices to be made. I mean, we're going to have a few on the color box. Sure. I'm going to fail.
We get the final numbers to us, and I'll take a look at the call.
The town should be back at the beginning of next week, so.
Here's our transfer station. So our transfer station, we've been talking about brush and the debris that's been floating down here. We're contemplating charging for large
vehicles, keeping it so that the town residents would have a pickup truck and or a small utility trailer to be dropped off for free. But if it's a state body, we would be charging dump trucks. I think we're talking about a fee. I want one more time to be able to rewrite this as far as what is allowed down there, and also have a little more discussion about should we be allowing non-residents to bring things here. Obviously, we already have a limit for no commercial haulers and no lot clearings. I agree with that. This should not be happening. But I need a little more time with that. The other thing, what is down there, I'm thinking probably needs to be chipped relatively soon versus putting it off. And I'd like to be able to tell them to get prices to have that done. So yeah, maybe at our next meeting, we can actually address that and authorize that to happen.
Yep, so have him seek those out and get them on the agenda for the next meeting.
Great, thank you. As far as recreation, thinking about where the teams are looking to be playing, we have guidelines from governor's office that basically for baseball and softball, which are the key things, they're not supposed to be practicing, they're not supposed to be doing any organized training until after July 6th. And they're going to need to have a plan in place for personal protection, and they're going to have to submit those plans to us. Peter is working on what we're going to require and is bringing back to us with the logistics of how we do it. But there's, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking we need to be thinking about how are we going to disinfect things, bathrooms, bleachers, areas that people are using at the park, and try to get some more information. I don't think we're going to have that all set before our next meeting, but the idea is that baseball, softball, not to even start practicing down there until after July 6th, and they have to submit to us an approved plan for personal protection.
Yeah, we want to get our kids, particularly since they've been pent up at home with their parents for a long time. You know, we want, I know the parents want to get them out of the house. Kids want to play. We want to get them there as soon as we can. We just have to ensure that we do it within the confines of the requirements from the state. You know, a lot of people are pointing to, oh, it says you can open up on July 6th. Well, that's what the governor said. If you do this, and nobody's talking about the parks, if you do this, and it's not simple. There's talks that you have to disinfect the bats in between. I mean, and the onus is on the group. I've actually talked with some of the members of the groups to come up with a safety plan, just like we have had to do for town hall to open up town employees. You know, our town employees every day, as part of our safety plan, have to take a self-evaluation that requires taking the temperature. They have to affirm that they haven't been in contact with anybody positive, they haven't gone to a hot spot in the U.S., they haven't been exposed to somebody who's positive. Every day they have to certify that. You know, these are the things that go on behind the scenes so the town is compliant with the requirements from the state. And it's no different for whether, you know, a sporting event, practice, they have to be in place. So, you know, we're working along the way. I know I appreciate the rec committee that's working with our rec leader to get those plans, you know, out there before the board so that we're all okay with it, we're comfortable with it. The unfortunate news is that, you know, like the governor today just shut down at midnight tonight. You cannot come into New York State from places like Florida unless you do a 14-day quarantine. We are seeing almost half the states in the U.S. having huge escalation in positive. You know, we just don't want to be in the position where we're contributing. And our residents expect that from us. I know there's individuals that personally are unhappy with the pace this is going along, but at the end of the day, I will always put the public health's interest ahead of personal interest. And so that's where we are.
When Peter and I met today, he's tracked a lot of information. He's going to put it together in a way that's easier for us to disseminate and get it back to us. He'd like to have us prepared if we want to have a discussion for the next meeting to be able to. So he will be getting the information kind of gathered so you're not having to go through all the
We're almost out of time.
Kyle and I have been working with the residents up there in Vanderbilt with ongoing and ongoing for a long time. Stormwater issues and drainage and property. But, you know, we put out the He called down the DOT, he had a guy there the next day. The guy called another guy up the next day. He looked over there, he got marks on the road. They're going to go up clear those ditches out. That isn't the solution to the entire problem going there, but it is one of the pieces of the puzzle. So it was nice to, I don't know why there was nothing left to do that there. So we shot it up. Please with that, we found our opportunity to work with them down there. Anything we can possibly do to help them. So we're very happy.
That's good, and I actually been through that the previous year. I had folks up there from DOT, very responsive. You know, we were coming into the winter season for where they take care of roads, road safety, snow and ice, and they were hoping to come back, and COVID hit. They actually looked at several scenarios. One was to dry well where you get down to a different soil type where water would flow from the surface down. They did test drillings on that. Turns out that's all heavy clay all the way down. That would work. They looked at surface drainage possibilities. There's not enough elevation drop between that development and the intersection of State 32197. So then they went and they marked the survey and they marked the possibility of running through the back of the private property owner's property there to go underneath Selfridge Road. So they looked at a lot of things. They keep looking. You just heard they looked again. You know, hopeful that they come up with a solution, but anything else? If not, we've got 3 minutes for our next meeting, and I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
First.
Thank you very much.